My presentation explores academic identities and academic experiences of the work. My aim today is twofold: to present some answers to my question, which I have posed in the title, what it means to be an academic. And secondly, I would like to offer some space to you to reflect on your own ideas, own senses, own academic identities, especially as there are so many young researchers, young academics participating in this seminar here. So it might be quite a good opportunity and good face to reflect on these things at this point of academic career. Well, I will start by giving you an overview of the presentation. I will give some background information first, then very briefly say something about changes in academic work. We have already heard a lot about it in the previous presentations. Then I will discuss what academic identity has meant traditionally, and then current diversification, polarizations of academic identities. And then in the last part of my presentation, I will focus on especially junior academics' identity constructions and end up with some conclusions. So first, some words about academic identity. What I mean by it. It is an answer to a question: who am I as an academic? Who am I as a person who works at the university in research, in teaching, or service activities? The answer to this question is not fixed, permanent, or stable, but it is continuously reshaped in daily work activities, interaction with colleagues and other people, in social interactions. I have one quote. It comes from Joel Fangnell, who has written a book entitled Being an Academic. And she defines academic identities in this way: identities are constructed, relatively fluid, and influenced by academics' biographies and habitus, their positions within the academic field, and their own ideological beliefs. So it's quite a complex concept. Academic identities are evolving. They may entail conflicting elements even. We do not necessarily always know perfectly well who we are, and our sense of ourselves can vary and evolve over time and in different occasions. Furthermore, I would like to emphasize that although identities are very intimate and very personal issues, they are always fundamentally interwoven with the social and cultural context in which we work and live our lives. So that's about the identity. Then just a list of recent transformations in higher education. In order to put identity building in a broader context, these transformations shape the working conditions and working environment of academics. And this list is from Mary Henkel, who is one of the leading figures in this area in higher education research and has made a long career in the field. And she mentions the following key transformations concerning academic identity building. Massification, as you know, growing number of population has gained a university degree, and new professions and semi-professions have reached an academic status. They have become academic disciplines, and the composition of the academic staff has become at least somewhat more diverse. Then marketization of higher education, the growth of external funding and market activities, the new public management and private sector ideas and practices are incorporated into universities, such as quality assurance, performance measurements, performance-based salary systems, and so on. Then globalization, the competition for funding, students, staff, and the talent becomes worldwide. Academic labor markets are worldwide, global. And finally, technological change, which is related to globalization in this way that it involves compression of time and space. It enables real-time interaction, collaboration globally, and enables collaboration between partners from different parts of the world. All these transformations have quite radically changed the academic landscape. And this raises the question how academics respond to these changes, and does being an academic mean nowadays something different from that what it used to mean before these transformations. So these transformations have changed the way academics work, and we have already heard a lot about this, but just quickly go through these changes. In the literature, it has been often emphasized and found out in empirical studies that academic work has become increasingly diversified, fragmented, and stratified, as Teresa, for instance, today already has told us. As a consequence, also casualization, fixed term, part-time employment have become common. Work has intensified and workloads have increased. There are new kinds of duties and tasks, and the expectations have grown. One should produce not only more, but also better outcomes in research, in teaching, and other activities. Academic work has also become increasingly transparent. Since academics are accountable for their work, and this means that the traditional kind of autonomy of the academic profession declines, as academics have become what is sometimes called, for instance, by Gary Rhodes, managed professionals. There are audits, performance measurements, metrics, rankings, so your work is made public. It's enough to ask, what is your age index? And then you get your position in the academic hierarchy. In all of these ways, the ways in which academics work and think of themselves as academics are changing, so it's often emphasized. Academic work and identity are not the same as they used to be. So let's first have a look what the traditional notion of academic identity then was, against which this current discussion about the new kind of identities takes place. So, traditional academic identity. It's rooted in deep dedication to work. Academic work is a calling which originates from academics' passion, love for work. It's not work, it's a way of life. Work is life, life is work. This identity building takes place in the socialization process to one's own disciplinary field, in which academics, young academics, internalize the values and norms, ideas, practices of their specific discipline. And in this way, they become members of a given academic tribe, as Tony Peacher has called it. So academic identities also traditionally are different in different academic and disciplinary fields, but they also share some commonalities, especially autonomy in work, academic freedom, and curiosity-driven work. They are at the core of academic traditional academic identity. Likewise, the highest aim is to achieve reputation and prestige within one scientific community, and this takes place via research merits. And furthermore, as this prestige and reputation is reached by getting a name for oneself, this notion of identity is extremely individualistic. It's an individual hero story. Next, I would like to present you a couple of quotes from interviews which have been gathered in two different research projects in which I have been involved. It's just to give you a flavor of what this kind of identity can mean in practice. The first quote comes from a Finnish senior academic in humanities. "I cannot draw a clear line between my own identity and my researcher identity. I have this joke that it's nice to get paid for being myself. This really is the pillar of my personality. And of course, it is also related to all my social relationships and my use of time. I received my current academy appointment during which I wrote my last book. This is absolutely ideal for doing research. If I were employed somewhere as a contract researcher who carries out contract research on some topic that is not personally very interesting, then the perspective would be totally different." The second quote comes from the UK, from a British professor in social sciences. "Oh gosh, yeah, I do really love work. And I would happily do it all the time, really. If I didn't have a family, I would probably just work all the time because it's a pleasure. And if ever I am on my own, I mean just occasionally, my wife and children will go away for a few days. I just work all the time. If my entire family would die on the car crash, once I got over the grief, which might take me many, many years, I would just work all the time." These both quotes are quite recent. They show that this kind of traditional academic identity notion still resonates well with some senior academics. They are able to make sense of their work and their own place in academia according to this ideal. It resonates with their aspirations and values and senses of themselves. However, this traditional view has also been contested and challenged. First, it is criticized for being a very elitist conception. It fits only with the experiences of the very few privileged at the top of the hierarchy. In this way, it entails and sustains internal power relations in academia. It makes a very sharp distinction between curiosity-driven basic research and contract research, which has less value, as in the first quote. And it also makes a distinction between research and teaching, in which teaching is always less valued. Also, the individualistic underpinning of this traditional notion has been criticized. It follows this kind of hero story plot, which belittles, devalues collaboration in academic work, and also sets very high standards, even so high that it's not easy for anybody, perhaps, to reach them. Moreover, and especially, it sets a masculine norm, because it's more difficult for female than male to live up to these high requirements. This is because women have carried most responsibility for the private life, especially the family and children, and therefore it's not so easy for them to commit totally to work. In this way, this traditional notion of academic identity reinforces and strengthens, intensifies the gendered structures in academia. So, but the current situation, as the consequence of the transformation, deep-going transformation in higher education, this notion of academic identity is often not fitting to our own senses what it means to be an academic. And it has been said that these academic identities are currently in a state of flux. It has been found in many empirical studies that academics' responses to this, to the transformation in their conditions, are mixed of adaptation of resistance. There are different kinds of responses, and accordingly, different kinds of identities. In one Finnish study, which Jani Ursin, who is sitting there, and I did on senior academics in different fields in Finnish universities, we found strikingly different academic identity constructions. I just mentioned them. We found a rebel who strongly and actively resisted the current university ideals and longed for the Humboldtian conception of university. There was a loser who had lost everything, and was forced to leave the university. No place for him anymore, or her. We found an overloaded worker who carried an enormous burden of teaching and administrative duties and was exhausted. There was a member of precariat who suffered from uncertain and insecure employment conditions. But on the other hand, there was also a winner who took it all, who had succeeded in fundraising, in evaluations, in rankings, and belonged to the top of his field worldwide. There was also a mobile careerist who saw the opportunities of the new situation and utilized them, crossed boundaries inside and outside academia, and moved ahead in his career. And there was also a changed agent who combined academic work with managerial tasks and believed that the transformations that she or he was facilitating in the workplace will do good to everybody in the long run. He was a believer. In this way, even at the same department, on the same corridor, academics' work experiences can vary a lot, and so did their identities also. So now I want to move on to junior academics. I hope this is interesting, especially, well, to everybody, I hope, but especially for you young researchers who are participating in this seminar. Junior academics are also otherwise, I think, quite interesting group of academics. For instance, Strike and Taylor has talked about early career insecurity. It's a special kind of insecurity. It has been said that they are the most vulnerable group of academic staff because they face declining career prospects and increasing competition for fewer resources and fewer university positions at the same time as they need to establish themselves as autonomous and independent scholars. They face also conflicting expectations and pressures. What is valued? Scientific relevance or societal impact of research, disciplinary expertise, to focus very narrowly on my disciplinary core area, or acquire wide-ranging skills, create large networks within, outside academia. What is best for me? So there's ambivalence as to what it means to be a successful academic. Johanna Hakala, who has made here in Finland, in Tampere, she made a PhD work, dissertation on junior academics, especially junior researchers. And she said that all early career researchers, and especially doctoral students, have to answer to these four questions in their identity work. They need to have an answer. What kind of research should I do? What kind of tasks should I prioritize? Am I good enough at what I am doing? What would be the right place for me in the future? There's also possibility outside the university. So many elements, also many very emotionally laden elements involved. Am I good enough? Will I succeed? Or should I go away? Or think something else? I will concentrate. Oh, sorry. I have so many papers, but now I'll find the right one. Well, I have studied with my colleague Lea Henriksson junior academics' identity constructions and also their career building. We have written an article. It's entitled Tribal, Proletarian and Entrepreneurial Career Stories, and it will come out in Studies in Higher Education sometimes. But it's already readable in this online first mode. And I will present some of our findings here. Our data comprise a focus group discussion with junior academics in social sciences. So these are all social scientists in their disciplinary field. We had 12 postdocs who all had temporary positions working at two Finnish universities. And all wanted to continue in academic career. They were very motivated to continue in academia. And then we find or distinguished five different kinds of identities. Noise of academic elite, victim in teaching trap, academic worker, member of research group, and academic freelancer. I will now present each of these five categories of identity constructions to you. First, I have a quote. Novice of academic tribe. Here's one female postdoctoral researcher. She describes her work. Nobody would do this work if this was only work. Otherwise, you must be mad or something. This is linked to you as a person and your way of life. For me, having freedom is what keeps me here. You are able to choose what kind of things you do, what you think is important. And then she goes on telling how she has those flow experiences when she totally is immersed and absorbed in work for days. So in this construction, the identity is committed to the scientific community of one's disciplinary field. The aim is to make a significant contribution. It's focused on research work. Teaching is quite at a marginal status. It has very high standards, strong pressure to gain recognition, and there's a risk of failure because tribes are selective. It's not at all easy to make a name within the tribe. But on the other hand, tribe membership also offers support and feeling of belonging. I am one of let's say, sociologists. University in this identity construction is seen as alma mater. Very fondly descriptions. It's like a cradle of science, intellectual home. It's a cozy place for me to be. This notion follows quite well the traditional idea of academic identity and career building. It has the passion for work. And there's no boundary between work and private life. All life is work. It's discipline-centered. It's loyal to one's tribe. But it's not committed to local university setting. It involves crossing institutional and national boundaries, going different universities, different national context. Then the other is victim in teaching trap. This is quite a different story. This is female social scientist who is working as acting lecturer. I have worked about 70 hours a week for several weeks. I like to teach and I receive good feedback from students. But by doing so, I'm taking a risk. If I'm thinking of my future, my list of publications should be longer. It doesn't matter if the students are satisfied when applying for positions. I have such a passion. I'd like to have time for research. And yet, I also love teaching so much. I feel guilty for not achieving enough. I have been diagnosed with burnout twice. I really don't learn. So this identity construction is committed to teaching and also related administrative tasks. There's a tension because the victim, this kind of victim, takes care of the reproduction of one's academic tribe. It is tribe loyal, but the tribe does not value teaching merits, only research merit. And in this identity construction, one is quite feels being trapped. Yet, there's positive feedback from students, which offers support, but lack of collegial sharing. So the consequence is experiences of being lonely and second class. So university is seen as an unethical, greedy institution that devalues a good teacher. This is also quite a traditional storyline in academia. Also traditionally, teaching merits do not count that much in academic career building. It's research. It's also very locally focused identity, focused on local university, local department. So this is the local labor market. It presents an identity as a good citizen of the department who takes care of the common good but is not valued by academia. Then, academic work. This is female researcher. Because my university doesn't give a damn about you, I won't be a promoter of the common good. It is like you get what you ask for. I do the things which belong to my job description, I do them well, but nothing extra. So, academic worker belongs to the flexible, just-in-time labor force with fixed-term employment. Academic worker is ready to exchange working time for salary, decent salary, but she or he is not committed to tribal values at all. There's a variation between teaching and research duties, all depending on funding. And this identity involves tensions concerning pressures to keep oneself always employable, updated, because you are moving from one project and one task to the next. You need to be able to do that But on the other hand, awareness of belonging to the mass of short-term academics gives support. There's a sort of precariat identity and worker dignity. And in this identity construction, university is an employer party responsible for working contracts. So it has also this kind of trade union dimension. This is related to massification of higher education and especially growth of externally funded research. It needs cheap labor, flexible labor. It's institution-centered, involves chain of work contracts within one university. But there's strict boundary between work and private life. And this academic worker has family responsibilities which she or he is not willing to sacrifice for the sake of work. Then member of research group. I must say that this project has gone like clockwork. My work contract is for 4 years and I didn't even apply for it. The people who were the original applicants left for different duties, and at that time I was about to finish my dissertation. Then I got this opportunity straight away. I really can't complain. I have a flexible boss, deadlines can be easily rearranged, and when we meet, ideas just turn up, and everything, atmosphere is relaxed. So this is fine. In this identity construction, commitment is to one's own group. It's focused on research, and EU-funded research projects are often mentioned in this context. However, there is a dilemma between group work, being a group member, and individual merit, because in academia, still, it's individual merit that counts. How to get the recognition as yourself? But the group and its large international networks within, outside academia, offer support, also protection, and also promise of career continuity, although the working in fixed-term employment. And in this identity construction, university is only a platform for research projects. University as a teaching institution remains very, very distant. This kind of career script or identity construction has been traditional in hard fields, but now it seems it's also available in social sciences, which are organizing activities increasingly in teamwork. It's group-centered identity. It's always we, not I. It crosses disciplinary, institutional, and national boundaries. It's very mobile. Then lastly, we have academic freelancer. I have always been at the center of discussion. I'm sort of generalist. I really work on many things. I have lots of research projects. I coordinate. I write columns, popular articles. I give consulting training. And in the autumn, I teach one course and give thesis supervision. I have all kinds of networks and many things going on. I've decided to succeed in this business and do whatever it takes, so long as the price isn't too high. I have plan B. So, academic freelancer identity is based on self-branding, self-marketing in diverse networks. It includes many kind of tasks and duties and activities. It's totally disconnected from a local, not totally, but very disconnected from the local institution. It's like free-floating in networks. It's networks that are at the core in this identity. The tension comes because you don't have also institutional background or backup, no institutional support. Networks are very difficult to maintain and create. It requires a lot of energy and work to keep these networks going. But academic freelancer has things that it's a question of self-support, self-confidence. It's a question about my abilities. Am I willing to succeed? And university is a facilitator in self-branding. It's good to have university affiliation while marketing and selling oneself. This is quite matching partner with the market-oriented higher education. It's self-centered, network-focused identity, and this crosses all kinds of boundaries. Boundaries are seen as very nasty things, obstacles in identity building. One wants to be free from all boundaries. So, some conclusions briefly. Academic identities have become diversified, fragmented, polarized, not only among the senior, but also among junior academics. There are fundamentally different understandings what it means to be an academic. So academics respond to the changes in the higher education environment in multiple ways, opposite ways. Also, I want to emphasize that academic identities are not stable construction. The same academic may have a different sense of herself or himself in different contexts. Lea Henriksson and I, in this article I talked about, we speak about three-tier university, because it used to be a case that it was said that university involves is a two-tier institution. We have professors and other established academics, and then we have a lower class of academics. But now we say, okay, could it be so that there are three tiers? We have this traditional tribal identity, which has not lost its resonance. And it could also even be said that this traditional identity is reinforced and strengthened by the current rhetorics of world class and excellence. It makes a distinction between elite and the rest, especially those who are committed to teaching. Then we have this worker identity. It resonates with the deterioration of employment conditions, what has sometimes been called proletarization of academic staff. And then we have this emerging, at least in social sciences, I would say, emerging market-oriented identities that are responses to increasing engagement with academic capitalism. We have member research group, which entails collective competition for funding, market competition between teams and consortiums. And we have academic freelancer who is competing individually, alone, on one's own, and enjoying it. So I will end here. I have run out of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Oili-Helena. We're kind of short on time, but there is time for a couple of short questions from the audience. There was such a wealth of information in this presentation.
Hello, I'm Anna-Leena Kähkönen. Thank you for your presentation. You mentioned shortly something about crossing disciplinary boundaries, and I was interested in if you have a few words about, because today we are having these more established fields that link different disciplines together. So for students already studying within those disciplines, they would have come to face this idea that they are going to do more interdisciplinary style of work. So do you think that affects their identity? What can you comment on that?
I think often it's case that when we have this kind of interdisciplinary area, it becomes disciplinary after a while. It becomes established as a new discipline. So that happens. And in that case, it's disciplinary identity again. But in these identity constructions that I talk about, for instance, it's only this tribal member, both in teaching and research, they are this victim and this elite, research elite. They stick to the very core of their discipline. They are very cautious not to go too far what is thought to be the very specific key issues in their disciplinary field by the international discussions or the professors, because it's there that the future professors probably would be. But in the other identity constructions, they were more or less interdisciplinary. And they wanted or they were forced to move from one discipline to another, to a neighboring discipline. They were quite mobile in this.
Thank you very much for your presentation. This was really interesting and made me think, and I'm still thinking. So that's why I would like to ask you something, because you said that in the traditional academic identity it's defined by calling, passion, dedication, devotion to your academic work, or this is how you define the academic identity, and the social practices of autonomy and freedom. I'm just thinking that when I look at these three new identities that you have defined, it seems to me that you still can find these old traditional academic calling, devotion, passion, etc., from there, which makes me ask that is it so that the traditional academies were very homogeneous, and if not, what has changed from the traditional to these types, if you still can find the same more or less the same definitions there?
Well, it all depends how you understand traditional. For instance, this what we called academic freelancer, it's very much about freedom, it's very much about autonomy, it's very much about me doing things I want to do, but it's not, and there may be also this like a dedication. I have some cause, I have some idea, I want to further it onwards. But not only in academia, also in media, also in consulting, in other places outside academia. So it's much more mobile, let's say. And it avoids all boundaries, that's one thing. There may be also, even in our data, of course I'm now talking about our data, I remember somebody saying that I wouldn't like to be a professor, for instance, because it's so restricted, you need to do so many things I don't want to do, I want to be my own boss. It's like all entrepreneurial spirit. So I think it's different. It has some notions like this, we could say dedication, but it's not dedication to the academic tribe or discipline and knowledge, but it's dedication to oneself. Does that satisfy you?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm sure there would be lots more questions and lots more discussion, but unfortunately we're running out of time. So I'd like to thank our speakers once more, as well as the audience for a very active discussion. And I hope that there will be space for this discussion to continue on some other forum at a later stage. Thank you.